No, I'm not. I don't think I'm really a fan of either Ishmael or Isaac. You know, I mean, I do love Israel. Old Abraham, you can't beat that guy, because Paul uses him as an example of faith, because Abraham, this guy, his faith was off the charts nuts. You know, to tell him that he is going to be the father of many nations, and he goes on being childless, and yet he still believes it, of a God he knows is going to come through. And then when the promised son eventually does arrive, God asks him to sacrifice him to him, which to me sounds nuts. And you got to have faith that is equally as nuts to follow through with it, or at least to fully intend to follow through with it. And sometimes that's what God does with our faith. He just wants to make sure we're ready and able and willing to follow through. And then he says, okay, now I know you were going to follow through. Now we don't have to go through with the thing. You know, sometimes that happens. It's the same thing with Solomon. God said to Solomon, what do you want? And Solomon goes, oh, I could ask for sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but I'm going to ask for wisdom instead. So Solomon asks for wisdom, and God says, because you asked for wisdom, you did the right thing, I'm going to give you sex, drugs, and rock and roll on top of it. Wow, that's the way to go. But back to Ishmael and Isaac. There's a principle here. Good morning, everyone. By the way, this is Martin Zender. You're at the Revelation series, and thus, I have a revelation for you today. Now, this revelation is not from the book of Revelation. This is one day sidetrack, but I was inspired on this yesterday. I thought about this, and I really need to give this to you. It's called the Ishmael-Isaac Principle, and I'm giving you this to help you in your life, because sometimes, and I know those of us all who came from a institutional Christian religion background, we were trained to always try to do the right things, and we worry all the time about doing the right things. And folks, you know how it is. We sit down and we contemplate courses of action. You come to a divergent road. You've been traveling along a path that's been all easy, but then all of a sudden you have a choice. And you have one path going to the right, one path going to the left. And sometimes, yes, the angel's on your right shoulder, the devil on your left, and you don't know which way to go. And you want to do the thing that pleases God. And you wait for a revelation. Many of us have wasted much time praying to God, waiting for a sign. What are you, a bunch of Israelites? God doesn't give signs today. He gives circumstances. This is the maturity in Christ, where you know that all is of God, and that every circumstance that comes into your life is not an accident. Not one of them is an accident, let alone all of them. Not even one. Everything has a purpose. And so, since God is the God of all circumstance, then your circumstances are the things that push you into doing a certain thing, taking a certain course, as opposed to the other course. That I've explained this to you, but I have not put it in the context of Ishmael and Isaac, and I'm going to do that now. I might have done this in a public address somewhere. Perhaps I did this in Birmingham, Alabama. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. I'm going to do it here now. It's going to be fresh. It's going to be new. I got a new take on it, because I'm several months or maybe several years more developed into this principle. Now, God told Abraham that he was going to have a son, and that God was going to multiply his seed as the sand of the sea and the stars of the heaven. Well, all well and good. Abraham believed it. But as time went on, he became unable to even zing. You know what I'm saying? Zing. Like, you know, you got me? So he's thinking about this. He's 100 years old. And he says, well, I'm not a fatalist. This is Abraham speaking, but it could be me. I'm not a fatalist. And so I'm going to react to the circumstances. I'm not doubting God. I just don't know the way in which God is going to make this thing happen, because God wasn't real specific with me. So one day, Abraham's wife, Sarah, came in and said, this thing's not happening with you and me, buddy boy, but why don't you go into my handmaiden? The seed's going to come from you. So, you know, not ideal for me. Abe, but let's go with it. So Abraham does it. Goes into Sarah's handmaid, Hagar, and a son is produced. And this son is Ishmael. And Abraham and Sarah say, well, this is the promised son. God says, by some means, sent a messenger to Abraham. No, this is not the promised son. Yeah, sends them angelic messengers. This time, next year, Sarah will bear a child. This is not the promised son. This is a son produced by the flesh. Abraham said, I didn't realize that. God said, that's okay. This gives me a great opportunity to produce the promised son against the backdrop of your exercise in the flesh, so that even 4,000 years later or so, Paul can use Hagar, the mother of bondage, and Sarah, the mother of the free child, Ishmael versus Isaac, can use them as an allegory of people under the law and people under grace. So what a great purpose these contrastive people served. Both Hagar, the mother of Ishmael, and Ishmael. Abraham had to eventually put Hagar and Ishmael out of his house. It was a very sad thing, but God comforted him, saying, don't worry, I will make Ishmael into a great nation as well. And these are the Arab nations today. And yes, they're still opposing the Israelite nations. But I'm telling you today that it doesn't have to be this way. So look, this is the point. You come to a divergent place, and you're looking around waiting for the voice of God. For instance, Abraham got this promise, and then maybe God didn't talk to him for a long time. So Abraham's going along, and he just is going to do the thing that seems right to him. You may say, well, that's bad, Martin. We can't do the things that seem right to us. Well, lacking a voice from God, or skywriting, or a magical letter delivered from the sky from God, we do what seems right to us based on circumstances. And Abraham's circumstances were right in his face. He couldn't have a child. Well, he could, but his wife couldn't. Right. He was still good to go, yeah. Apparently, he's still good to go because he went and came into Sarah's handmaid. So anyway, this was all, you might call it scheming. You might call it overthinking things. I don't. I call it, here's the circumstance. I'm not sure what to do here. So this sounds like a good idea. It wasn't a great act of disobedience. It wasn't a defiance in the face of God. It was, maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. God's done crazier things. Yeah, absolutely. So you just do it. Just do it. Thank you, Nike. You just do it. Now, I'm not saying you go out and do something that's just, you know, is completely wrong, or something that goes against your conscience, or you don't do something just because other people are doing it. You consider two courses. Now, this is what I've always told God. I said, look, I have two choices here. I'm going to do the thing that seems right to me, because you're not sending me a voice. You're not writing the answer in the sky. So I'm going to do this thing, and it sounds like a good idea. It could be an absolutely terrible idea. You want an example? Oh, okay. Let's see. Let's say meeting a person. You meet a person and you think that this person is great for you and you want to go and be with that person. I've had this experience in my life. You go and be with this person and it turns out to be absolutely wrong thing to do. And yet at the time you acted, I acted in complete, what I thought, compliance, and everything felt great, and everything was wonderful with God's plan for my life. And in fact, you know, everything is God's plan for your life, absolutely speaking, but sometimes it is necessary to produce an Ishmael before the Isaac comes. You see? Even better to use someone else as an example. I had a friend, you've heard me tell this story, who prayed for God to lead him into all wisdom, all truth, all righteousness, all knowledge. No, it's a great prayer. What? No, it's not a proud prayer. It's a great prayer. What's wrong with wanting to enter into all these glorious things? Wisdom, knowledge, all knowledge. That's what we're supposed to do. Come to a realization of the truth. So this man prayed earnestly. And like a week later, one of his friends came up to him and said, hey, how would you like to join the Worldwide Church of God? And my friend said, wow, here's an answer to prayer. It seemed right to him. I think I'm going to join up with this religion, which is a cult, folks. The Worldwide Church of God is a cult. So my friend went into this cult for 20, 30 years. Crazy amount of time. Learned really thoroughly, got a great education in religious bondage. He was producing an Ishmael. And then, after 30 years, God called him out of that and said, no, this isn't the way. But God, and God says, shh, hush, I know, I sent you onto this path. I sent that person to suggest that to you. Just like I gave Abraham the thought, wonder if I should just go ahead and hearken to my wife's great idea to have sex with her handmaid. So he did. And they had a baby. And God said, that's a nice kid, cute and everything, but this isn't the promised son. I'm going to produce the promised son next year or whatever. So I don't think Abraham freaked out over the fact that he went down a divergent path. You might call it the wrong path. Relatively speaking, yes, it was the wrong thing to do. But absolutely speaking, it was right. And Abraham, I believe, had the maturity to understand that. And my friend then, after 30 years in the Worldwide Church of God, another person came into his life and said, hey, have you considered the concordant version of the New Testament? It opens up a lot of great truths, such as that God is the Savior of all humanity, and that your apostle is Paul. You don't have to follow all these Old Testament laws, which they would do in the Worldwide Church of God, if you can believe that noise. That's just craziness. So my friend produced an Ishmael in the Worldwide Church of God. But he didn't freak out. He could have like, God, you led me down the wrong path for 30 years. It became a foil against which God could then bring an Isaac. Isaac is really only spectacular after the failed attempt. It wasn't a failed attempt, really. I take that back. Of Ishmael. Ishmael was a necessary prelude. The flesh, first comes the flesh, afterwards that which is spiritual. The soulish is first, the spiritual is second. Right? This is the order of things. Adam comes first, then comes Christ. So I'm always telling God, and I recommend this to you. I say, God, look, I'm going to do what I think is the right thing. Like, I'm going to go ahead and schedule this conference. I just think this is the right thing to do. Or I'm going to go with this person. Or I'm going to accept this person into my intimate circle. Or I am going to get this car. I mean, something as mundane as I'm going to buy this brand of rice. You know, I will stand at the store for 5 minutes debating over which brands of foods to get. Should I get this rice? Or that one. This one has, you know, I look at the ingredients. Well, this one has sodium nitrite, but this one has sodium phosphate, or this one has nothing at all. So I'm debating, and I think, oh, I'm just going to get this brand. Or, you know, you do that when you, oh my gosh, when you book an airline flight. Isn't that the most stressful thing you can do? You're booking this flight. You're not sure which day's the best. You try to do everything right. Which is the plane that's going to crash? Is it this one? Which is the one that's going to land in a tree? Is it the United flight or the American flight? Or is it the Spirit flight? You know, so is this going to be the flight that the terrorists board? It's just, you have so many considerations. You just have to come to the point where you, thank you again, Nike, just do it. Just book the damn flight. Do the best you can. Don't go nuts over it. Don't twist your intestines into a knot. Just do it. And to do this, this is a gift. I'm giving you a technique in life, a living technique. To do this, you must be willing to produce an Isaac, an Ishmael. You have to be willing to produce an Ishmael. And I say this whenever I make decisions. I said, God, this could be a fantastic decision, the absolute right thing to do. I could be putting out an Isaac right off the bat here. Could be a rare thing, like, boom, there's your Isaac. Or it could be that what I'm doing right now, which seems like the best thing to me, is a complete exercise of the flesh. I'm not aware that it is, but it could be. And if it is, I dedicate it to you. And I will produce an Ishmael, if that's what you want. And I will go down an Ishmael path for a day, a week, a month, a year, whatever it takes. If this is an Ishmael, and if you need to build an Ishmael and use me, an unwitting tool, yet your slave, If you think it's necessary for me to do this, then I'm willing to do it. And then it's up to you, God, to produce the Isaac. It's up to you then to bring a wonderful thing of the Spirit out of my fleshly endeavor. Wow, is that what that is? I think this honors God. I think what you're basically telling God is, look, I'm willing to be a vessel, not of dishonor, because no, we're always vessels of honor no matter what. Well, you can't dishonorable vessel yourself. Once you're a vessel of honor, once you're saved, you can't get out of any of this stuff. So you're always going to be a vessel of honor. But within your vessel of honorhood, you can do some fleshly stupid things that you completely intended to be right. Oh no, I took the wrong flight, it landed in a tree. And God says, that's all right. I wanted your airplane to land in a tree because now I'm going to get you out of the tree and I'm going to do something completely new with your life. I'm going to build an Isaac out of this Ishmael of a crash landing. Oh, thank you, God. That was wonderful. Yeah. Hey, look, I'm trying to make the best out of things down here. Let's face it, not everything goes right the first time or the second time. So you might call this little address of mine here from my laundry room, how to handle it when things don't go right the first or second time. You look back and you see the divine precedent and you see the first time, Adam, Abraham, Cain and Abel, God gets it right the second time. Okay, and you have to ask yourself, law and grace, God seems to get it right the second time. Why does he keep screwing up the first time? Why not just start with grace? Forget Adam, forget the law of Moses, start with grace. Forget Adam, start with Christ. Forget Ishmael, start with Isaac. Forget the flesh, start with the Spirit. Forget the soul, start with the Spirit. Forget death, start with life. Forget sin, start with salvation. Nah, my friends, you cannot do any of these things because the sin and the death and Adam and Ishmael and the law of Moses, all these things are essential prerequisites. My friend getting into the worldwide church of God, boy, that guy got an education in religious bondage and it set the stage for him to be delivered. And he didn't freak out. God, why did you lead me down that path for 30 years? Ay. Well, he did a little bit, but he didn't do it quite as dramatically as I did. Well, maybe he did. I didn't see him in the still quiet moments. But anyway, you can relax and say, look, okay, that was necessary. Apparently, you can add apparently there, because if it happens, then it's apparently that was meant to happen. And here's when the knowledge of the sovereignty of God will serve you well, my friends. You are served well by knowing that all is of God, by knowing that there really, absolutely speaking, there are no divergent paths. If your plane's meant to land in a tree, then it will. That's of God too. And you were meant to book that flight. Why didn't I just book the other flight? Because you had to land in a tree. That's why you had to. It had to happen. My friend Nancy here that fell on that step, that had to happen. Why didn't I take the back door instead of the front door and fall? Well, I don't know, because you had to produce this Ishmael. It was a dud. It was a flop. You fell down. I fall down, you know, literally and metaphorically. We all fall down metaphorically. It's almost easier to fall down physically than to fall down metaphorically. And you have to get yourself back up from some terrible disaster of character or a mistake, and brush yourself off, tell yourself, you know what, I produced an Ishmael, and now it's up to God to produce the Isaac. And I give God opportunities all the time. I say, God, hey, if you want to produce an Isaac in my life, and if you have to have me produce an Ishmael first, I'll do that for your glory, because you're going to look good. It's all about you looking good, not me. I look like a schlup, but you're going to look good, because you produced a wonderful, glowing, vibrating spiritual wonderment out of my failure. And wow, am I willing to be the handmaiden of the Lord to that extent, the slave of Christ? Yes, I am.